Welcome to the Circle Day Show. You might be surprised to hear a slightly different voice to Yodette, but this is Danica DeLung, a previous guest on the show, filling in for Yodette for a week. I'm joined in the studio by Una Byrne, who's an anarchist and a trade unionist, and on the phone by Debbie Shaw, who's an anarchist academic, both of whom have previously been on Yodette's show. And we're going to have a bit of a conversation about women and anarchism, what inspires women to become anarchists, what issues they may face in the movement. We opened there with the Old Crow Medicine Show doing the old Woody Guthrie song, Union Maid. And one of the interesting things about that song is, if you were listening to the last chorus, is how it seems to think that the best thing for a union woman to do, at least in 1940, was to marry a union man and have a happy married life with a union card. What's particularly interesting is that song was written a month after Emma Goldman died. And 20 years previously in the US, obviously you had a woman at very much at the forefront of the political movement in the US. But within 20 years, women's role in the movement had declined and moved backwards. Women's role in the workplace had been moved backwards. And it was another 20-odd years until the 60s, until women's rights and women's involvement in politics came back onto the agenda. And it wasn't until the 70s, really, and second wave feminism that became a major part of it. One of the things we're seeing now is increasing number of women within the anarchist movement on platforms and involved in organizations, but we're still seeing a situation where the majority of people who are at events and taking part in a lot of things are still men. So I wanted to come on to the show filling in for Yodette and actually open up this discussion as a male presenter so that I could listen a bit, and hopefully the listenership can hear and listen to some of the things that may be stopping women getting involved, and also find out what actually inspires women to get involved. So maybe we'll open it up with Una. Una, can you tell me what inspired you to become an anarchist in the first place?
Well, I sort of came to anarchism through feminism, through the women's liberation movement, although I think I was always sort of anti-capitalist, anti-authoritarian, got involved in sort of feminist activism after the birth of my first child. And was doing a lot of sort of women-only stuff. Sort of staying away from the male-dominated left. Gradually, I suppose, I decided to, in terms of women's liberation, that class struggle and everything else had to play a role, and sort of gradually started getting more and more involved with sort of mixed anarchist groups. But I think feminist activism and feminism theory is sort of grounded in anarchist theory as well. The second wave you're mentioning there, the 70s and 80s, a lot of that was based on sort of the same principles as anarchist principles, you know, non-hierarchical, anti-capitalist. So yeah, the big similarity between my radical feminism and my anarchism, and that's when I sort of realised I was an anarcho-feminist, you know, an anarchist.
And Debbie?
Yeah, very similar, actually. The what Una said is absolutely true, that 1970s feminism was grounded in anarchist principles. Also, very simply, the state presupposes gender, and in effect, the institutions of the state support the gender division of labour. And if you think about, for instance, the law, that the law is based in an understanding that there are two genders and that they have their specific roles, because it supports marriage. There would not be marriage, there would not be marriage laws and divorce laws if gender was not understood in the way that it is. And I don't think we can ever have a radical feminism if we perpetuate the state form.
One of the interesting things that's happened since the 70s, I interviewed Alice Nutter in 97, and that was a key period in the anarchist movement when they wound up the original class war. Now, I know the London group continued it as a movement, but a lot of people were involved in it. One of the things she was saying is that the reasons why they did that was they felt it was a particularly sexist organisation. It was very based on kind of young boy macho, and they were looking at new ways of organising. Obviously, what came out of that was a massive growth in the Reclaim the Streets movement, which is in some ways at the origin of what's happening now. Do you think that process has helped get more women involved in the movement and has opened up the space? And do you think that project is still ongoing?
You're talking to me now, Donica?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that it has got women more involved. I'll tell you why. I think that women don't get involved in political activism for the same reason that women in the dominant culture don't get involved in things outside their immediate home and family. It's because they just don't have time. I think that the gender division of labour still exists. I think women have mostly caring roles, and unless they can get themselves into family situation or a living situation in which they're given the space, then they simply don't have the mental space or the time to actually get involved in politics. I also think that what else stops women getting involved? Although, you know, I'm not, you know, painting a completely bleak picture. There are certainly, I've just been to the Bank of Ideas. I was teaching a class there with some very feisty women who were challenging absolutely everything I said. It was absolutely brilliant. But I think that we kind of assume that because we're anarchists, somehow we've dealt with the gender thing. And there's a lot of baggage from the dominant culture that we bring into our movements, which, you know, alienates women, and they don't feel that they often don't feel they have a space to voice that.
Una, you've been involved as a trade unionist, and that's kind of one of your main areas of working. How do you find it as a woman trade unionist, and have you managed to get more women involved in trade unionism, but through that kind of introduce them to radical ideas?
I suppose I completely agree with what Debbie's saying about the reasons that some of the reasons that stop women getting involved in radical politics. It's the same, you can't differentiate really between what stops women getting involved in any part of life, mainstream culture, mainstream politics, trade unions, the left, anarchism. Even though I am involved in unions, I'm not a rep. I'm a Unison member, and in Unison, I think on a grassroots level, the rank and file, a lot of those members are women, and there are a lot of women reps as well. But as you go further and further up the hierarchy in terms of branch secretary and chair, and then even above that in terms of the region, there's the women aren't there, you know. We live in a patriarchy. It exists here, it exists in the union, it exists in radical groups, it exists at home. You know, we're only 30 years into the second wave of the women's liberation movement. You know, we've still got a long, long way to go, you know. And yeah, echoing what Debbie says, you know, just because people are, you know, trade unionists or of the left or anarchists, it doesn't mean that they've dealt in any way with sexism or racism or homophobia or anything else like that as well.
My own experience as a trade unionist has been, in most cases, when I start working with people in the workplace and try and encourage them to get more involved, I've always found that the people who are most equipped to actually do it have been my women colleagues. But I've also found that the first step of saying no to the boss, to that hierarchical figure, has been the most difficult step for my women colleagues to do. Once they get beyond that, they've found it's much, much easier, and they've turned out, in many cases, to be really good workplace reps. Has that been your experience?
Well, I mean, in terms of the workplace, at the end of the day, you're always going to have good conversations with women at work, because in work, we are totally discriminated against. We're usually found in the lower spectrum in terms of pay and status. You know, you've got women being discriminated at work, being sexually harassed at work, losing their jobs a lot quicker, and especially in the current climate, right, women... you know, we're bearing the brunt of the public sector cuts. In terms of saying no, I suppose, as females, we're not socialised to say no. And I suppose it's sort of, that's something that we need to work on with, you know, upcoming generations, you know, that women are sort of socialised to be amenable and pleasing and quiet and, you know... It's like what Debbie's saying about the dominant culture and the dominant discourse. That's what it is, you know. And I'm glad to hear what Debbie's saying about young women and being quite feisty and stuff like that. And actually, I feel hopeful and draw inspiration from young women. And, you know, and it does seem to be, you know, yeah, they're getting a lot more feisty and stuff like that. And we need more of that, really.
Yeah, Debbie, just on that point, I've noticed the same myself, particularly in groups like UK and CUT, actually. There's a lot of women on the very, very much on the front line, very much driving that. What do you think has encouraged them, has made the difference that's getting them more involved?
I think partly it's because they're the daughters of the women, of, you know, the baby boomers, or perhaps later than baby boomers now, come to think of it, that were involved in the beginnings of the second wave of feminism. I think that also they, one of the things that's happened for women is that work has become feminized. Although I completely agree with Una that we are still very much underpaid in those terms, that if you look at the sort of top earners, they're always going to be men. There have been reports that there are more women employed at the moment than men in this country. Now, you know, although we don't earn that much, we are becoming a very large part of the workforce. And I think we're beginning to recognize our power. And I really hope it continues. I really hope that we continue to see more and more women joining the movement and more women willing to raise their voices. Because as Una said, you know, women, we are still socialized to be more timid, to not speak out, to be in the background. And what I like to hear is women's voices raised in an articulate way and in a confident way.
Una, from your experience, just turning very specifically to the anarchist movement, in general, obviously, we adopt the structures of the society around us. But are there specific issues that you as a woman and you as a mother face getting involved in the union that really you'd like to encourage people to think about more often when they're involved organizing things?
Yeah, I suppose being a parent, being a mom, it makes everything really, really difficult. And, you know, sometimes, well, when you're a young woman, you know, you're feminist and, you know about the patriarchy and stuff like that, but often it isn't apparent to you sometimes. As soon as you have children, you know, you come face slap bang up against the patriarchy, you know, and you're ruled out. A lot of things are ruled out for you in terms of work, your social life, organizing, radical politics, the union, you know, it's no different at all. In a lot of the meetings I go to, you know, there aren't that many women anyway, but of those women, very few are the carers of young children. I think in terms of organising, it's really, really important to try and work things so that those of us that are carers, and that's not just women and not just young children, but those of us who have caring responsibilities could get there and participate a little bit easier. And definitely if we make our organising more child friendly, you're definitely going to encourage more women to get involved. And that's the same for the anarchists and stuff like that as well. You know, there's not that many. There are some children, but there's not that many children. About meeting in pubs and stuff like that late at night, you know, it's not very amenable if you've got a young family. It makes it quite difficult, really. And, you know, in terms of sort of collectivising stuff, you know, that's what us anarchists are all about, you know, collectivising the problems and issues and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't see any of my comrades sort of pushing for, you know, let's collectivise childcare, you know, let's spread this responsibility out a bit. And even if in terms of anarchist events and stuff like that, if, you know, I bring my children and there's a creche, you know, what's the gender of the worker in the creche? It's always a woman, you know. So I would strongly suggest to the comrades, which I do all the time, actually, you know, the men need to step up and, start doing a bit of the childcare, you know, and not just at home, but in a political space and a political sense as well.
Debbie, you spoke at the Alarm conference that mm-hmm. I spoke at as well. One of the things that struck me was I felt there was a slightly different tone to that than I've often found at anarchist events. There did seem to be more of an attempt for people to work together and be less hostile. I'm not sure if you felt the same, because I know there was a bit more of disagreement during your topic. But yeah. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed an attempt to kind of move beyond what has often been the infighting and the divisions in the movement?
I think it happens at times, and I think that the Alarm conference was probably one of them, where I think one of the benefits of putting on events like that is that it does bring us together, and it brings us together in a space where we're focused for a particular time, a couple of hours, 3 hours, and which we have, you know, certain issues to address, and you know, the fighting gets put aside. I was being deliberately provocative, actually, because I actually quite enjoy rattling people's cages, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the downside of that, seeming to come together and being prepared to work together, is that very often people are too often preaching to the converted. And I really think that we need it. We need constantly shaking up. I think we need to ask ourselves difficult questions. And, you know, the infighting is very much not to do with our politics so much as to do with personal issues. And we need to air our personal issues, frankly. I think one of the problems that we face is that, as I said earlier, you know, that we think that because we're anarchists, we think we've dealt with the gender issue. We haven't dealt with the issues that people face on a daily basis. As part of any sort of group, a group in the workplace or as a family or even in relationships. And so I think that I personally want to be as confrontational as possible and kind of shock people out of their complacency.
This for both of you, I'll go to Una first, but if you had very specific things that you could recommend to anyone involved in organising anything in the movement that might, from your point of view, draw more people in and more women into the movement. And maybe one of my criticisms that I would make of the Alarm conference is I didn't see very many new faces. That contrasted very much to the book fair, where I saw lots of new faces. But Una first, if you could think of two or three very specific, very practical things that you'd call on people to do, what would they be?
Definitely think about childcare and caring responsibilities. In terms of getting more women involved, I suppose as anarchist groups need to be going to the point of of conflict for women. So we need to not be seeing, you know, women's struggles as women's struggles and we can't get involved. But anarchists need to be ensure that they're joining women in the struggle, in their struggles. So whatever that might be, you know, I don't know, you know, in the workplace or, you know, abortion rights or, you know, don't just leave that to the feminists or to the women. We need to get out there and become, you know, comrades in arms with women in struggle. The thing is, once you get a few women involved, more women come. It's so daunting going to a meeting. You know, you don't know anybody. You walk in as a woman and there's only men there, you know. But having a few women there, you know, makes it a lot easier. And just having these conversations, you know, a lot of anarchist groups, you know, they'll have sort of, you know, discussion groups or reading groups, you know, instead of always reading, you know, the anarchist classics, why don't we encourage sort of feminist or women's writings to be read instead? You know, let's educate ourselves about feminism. And then, I mean, a group that I'm involved in, which is sort of a national anarcho-syndicalist organisation, I'm not going to name, but I was interested in them for quite a long time, but knew that it was totally a male-dominated organisation. They started having discussions around gender, and that, as soon as I heard that, that encouraged me and gave me the confidence to join their group, because I knew at least, whatever their faults, they're at least thinking about the issues. And some other women joined as well because of that, you know.
And Debbie?
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I agree with Una there that I think that that addressing issues that women are interested in and concerned about will go a long way to attracting more women. But I also think that we need to address issues on the level of everyday life. You know, there's a slogan of the second wave of feminism that the personal is political, and I think that equally applies to the anarchist movements. I think that we have to make the personal political, and I think that we have to show that we're open to discussing things that concern women outside a sort of more general sphere of politics, you know, the domestic, the sort of things that women have to deal with on a daily basis. I think that if we showed ourselves more open to that sort of discussion, then we'd certainly attract more women and more young women as well.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. I think we've come to a fairly natural end to the conversation. Thanks a million to Debbie for stepping in at the very last minute today, when unfortunately a previous guest had to step down. Just a final message I'd like to send out there. I'd be really interested in trying to get a project like this up and running in North London. Personally, I have no idea how to go about it, but if there's anybody who's interested in working with me and seeing if we could get something going, please get in touch. You can get in touch through Resonance and they can pass you on my details, or if you know how to spell my name, I'm easy to find everywhere. But I know Dunnock is slightly different, difficult for everyone who's not Irish, yeah. And even for those who are, because there's lots of ways of spelling it. And just to wrap us up, I think I'll just throw in a song, a Chumbawamba song from a rather violent feminine point of view, which is the ultimate song of revenge and domestic violence.
When I was about 14, I used to go out with complete dickheads. Blokes that thought they had a right to hit you, only I didn't realise. And one day a bloke called John Tullock punched me, and I pulled him down by hair and I kicked his fucking head in.